supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Posting now, and I have no dry, brown, shredded fall leaves from last year to make compost with. You're always warning us not to just use green waste. What can we use instead of fall leaves to get some compost cooking? It's a great question. I've got some great answers, and you'll hear them when we get to the question of the week. Mostly it's a phone call show, cats and kittens, and you know what that means. We're taking that heap and helping of your telecommunicated questions, comments, tips, tricks, etc. at 1-888-346-9499. Jay, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, good morning, Mike. This is Jay. I'm calling from good old Winco, PA.
Very good.
I've been gardening and composting my whole life, really, thanks to my dad. And my sister is also an avid gardener. She lives in Virginia. She told me that not to put banana peels in the compost. And
because?
I asked her why. She didn't remember. And so I looked on the website. I looked under, you know, kitchen waste, and I didn't see anything about banana peels. What can you tell me?
I can tell you that banana peels have a long gardening lore and are objects of almost veneration. There are people who religiously bury banana peels around their plants with the theory that bananas themselves are loaded with potassium. Potassium, of course, is one of the three essential plant nutrients, and they figure this is a good way to get potassium to their plants. I've heard it especially for roses, for some reason, where people attribute all sorts of mystical powers to it. What it mostly does is bring raccoons into your garden who excavate the soil and aerate it very well as they dig up these old banana peels. You have raccoons?
Absolutely.
Okay, good, good. Don't be nice to them. The only problem with banana peels and citrus rinds and other things of that nature, which if you've been composting for a long time, you've probably noticed, is that they don't compost at the same rate as apple cores or lettuce leaves, and that when you sort through your finished compost, you have some still fairly structural intact banana peels behind.
Right?
Because they are so fibrous. They are as good as any other kitchen waste. The problem, of course, is getting them to compost. And the answer to that is if you wish to incorporate them, they just have to be chopped up. You can't.
Okay, that's what I'm going to say.
You can't throw them in whole. I know there's people who experiment. They buy an old garage sale blender, and they try to liquefy these kind of things, and then they pour it into their compost pile. I have been told not to overdo citrus in the compost pile.
Okay.
Because
that's good to know as well.
Yeah, citrus does contain a lot of naturally occurring very powerful chemicals, you know. So they can be, corrosive may not be the right word, but I would think if you can chop your banana peels up into small chunks or liquefy them, that they would be a mitzvah in the compost pile.
Then we'll just try that, because I haven't put a banana peel in my compost since, and
This might be one of those whisper down the lane things where she got it backwards, because so many other gardeners will tell you banana peels are like miracle cures for plant problems.
Okay.
All right, good luck, Jay.
Thanks, Mike.
Keep eating your bananas, man.
Okay, bye. Thanks.
1-888-346-9499. Julie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing just wonderful. Where is Julie great?
I live in Northport, Michigan.
Oh, okay, so that's why you're great, right?
Exactly.
All right, what can we do you for?
Well, we have a pasture that has been, I guess, neglected for about 20 years, and so it's fairly overgrown with autumn olive.
Oh.
And we would like to graze our sheep out there, and the, I guess, advice we've been given is how to get rid of this autumn olive includes herbicides. and I guess we'd like to do something.
So I guess you've been told to cut the trees to the ground and then paint herbicides over the roots, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Physical well, now, with many of these so-called invasive shrubs, goats are one of the answers. There are professional weed-eating goats that go into fragile ecosystems. And for some reason, in many cases, I'm blanking out. We had a guy on the show years ago who actually had a herd of like hundreds of goats that they were using in California to get rid of something. And he said it was amazing. Once they turned the goats out into this wild area, they almost completely ate the invasives and left the native plants that they were hoping would somehow come back alone. And, of course, they did what goats do in the woods and fertilized the plants left behind. I know sheep eat grass. Do they eat small plants and shrubs? Is there any chance, you know, you could cut them down physically, you know, drag away the top part of the plant? And I wonder if your sheepies would eat any regrowth and perhaps keep them under control by themselves.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were thinking. They will eat the tender shoots. They couldn't kill a full-grown shrub like goats could, but we were wondering if that was going to be the best solution, is just to cut it down and keep it down.
I think that in many cases, of course, depending on the shrub we're talking about, I think this is what they do with the goats.
Oh, we've thought about a herd of goats. There just don't happen to be many around the area here.
How many sheep you got?
Three.
Oh, okay.
three adults and three lambs.
So. Okay. So, and the lambs are new, right?
Yep, brand new.
Oh, little springy lambs. And you got a big pasture.
It's a couple acres, yeah.
Now, have you ever tried eating the fruits of the autumn olive?
We have, and I can't say it was an enjoyable experience.
Well, you're supposed to make a jelly out of them.
Okay.
You're supposed to let them get ripe and then make a jelly. And I'm looking at my Wild Urban Plants of the Northeast book as we're speaking. And, you know, the guy who wrote this, he's become a good friend of mine. He and I agree that wineberries, another wild plant, produce some of the most delicious fruit in the world. And I'm reading exactly what he says here. And he goes, quote, "The edible fruits can be used to make an interesting jelly." So that's perhaps not the biggest endorsement.
No.
Of all kind.
No.
I would think that, first of all, you have a big job ahead of you. How many trees, shrubs, need to be severed no matter how we're doing the rest of this?
It's pretty thick.
And are we going to go in sections, or are we going to destroy ourselves by exhausting all of our resources the first month and then want to give up farming and gardening and sell the sheep and move to a townhouse?
I suppose if we're smart, we'll probably do this over 2 or 3 or 4 seasons.
I like it. I like it. Okay. And you'll clear certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, first of all, I think you got to go the easy way first. You got to take some areas. You got to, you know, cut the shrubs off at about, I'm guessing, a foot off the ground, something like that. And then, boy, I don't want you to burn the tops.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I mean, it's just going to, you know, put pollution in the air. It adds to global warming.
Okay.
But these are treacherous plants. Well, you know, just don't tell me if you're going to do it. I would like to find a place to pile them up that's out of the way if you got a lot of room. You know what you might be able to do is go through this whole thing with a chainsaw and just take them down, pull them all over to one corner and lay them down sideways. I'm wondering if all the dead bodies might not smother the stumps underneath them.
Okay.
While the sheep work on the smaller ones. If you see that the sheep are not eating the regrowth, which I doubt. It sounds like we got a good symbiotic relationship going here. Mm-hmm. There is a tool called the weed wrench that was designed for easy removal of the roots of invasive plants.
Okay. okay.
So you wouldn't have to, like, get a backhoe. Is there a man involved in this work?
Oh, yeah.
Well, then he'd like to get a backhoe, wouldn't he?
He might, yeah.
And pull these things out. Because, you know, that's what they'll do in the real world, is they'll just backhoe the whole thing up and do that sections at a time. I would chainsaw them down about a foot off the ground in a test area, keep the sheep fenced in there, see how they do with it. It may just be progressing to different areas, which you're going to want to rotate your pasture anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be your use for the land will also be a solution for the problem. But these are plants that were planted as like living fences along highways to prevent erosion. And obviously it was another bad idea. They really did get out of control.
Would there be any reason why we wouldn't want to chip and compost these shrubs?
I think that would be great if you don't mind going to the work. You need a pretty big chipper to do that kind of work, but it would have immense value to pile up all the chips. You wouldn't be getting any regeneration or anything like that, and that pile of chips would heat up fast, especially if you put some sheep manure in there.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Well, good luck, and remember, if it took 20 years for it to get this bad, it is smart to take a couple of years to remediate it.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, Julie?
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
This is WHYY. You're listening to You Bet Your Garden, and you're also listening in the midst of our spring membership campaign here at WHYY. I'm Joanne Allen, being joined by Eugene Son, and we're asking you to show your support for this program and to show your support for public media in the Delaware Valley by calling us at 1-888-345-9499. 888-345-9499. You can also pledge online by going to WHYY.org. Either way, whatever you're comfortable with, give us a call and give us your pledge.
One of the things I love about this program is that there are parts of You Bet Your Garden that are of interest to people who aren't even gardeners.
Like you and me?
I advocate the do no harm method for keeping the plants and shrubs around my house from getting any worse. That's kind of my goal in life. But for example, it was just a few weeks ago that they had a show where he had an expert on talking about potential predators to stink bugs. Stink bugs are becoming very prevalent in our region, and a lot of people in our listening area have been dealing with them, and not much they can do with them, so they went out and found this interesting researcher who was trying to find another insect that could become a predator to them. Also, I know that all spring, Mike's been fielding lots of calls from people on, well, what can I do to help either trees or shrubs or other plants that got injured over the heavy snows over the winter, and how to kind of nurse them back to health. It's kind of that practical knowledge that is great if you have a situation just like that in your home, in your garden that you can fix. But it's interesting to people, even if you don't have that situation, you could live in an apartment here in downtown Philadelphia and still find You Bet Your Garden interesting. That's why we listen to it. So please call and support it. 888-345-9499.
And online at WHYY.org. You Bet Your Garden is one of the most fun shows to listen to on the WHYY schedule. I know nothing about gardening. I know nothing about manure and composting and all of that stuff. But I learn things every time I listen to Mike McGrath. There are many people out there right now who are huge fans of Mike McGrath. And so if you are, and if you're a huge fan of You Bet Your Garden, and you want to support WHYY during our spring membership campaign, now is the time for you to step up to the plate and hit a home run by calling 888-345-9499. Also, go online at WHYY.org and make that pledge.
We are going to be going right back to Mike McGrath and You Bet Your Garden, but you can make a pledge during the program just as well. 888-345-9499. If you'd like to make a pledge and you'd like to get a memento from You Bet Your Garden, we do have this You Bet Your Garden coffee mug that's shaped like a flower pot with a handle on the side. It's in that terracotta color. Mm-hmm. It's got the WHYY logo and the You Bet Your Garden logo. Yours for a pledge of $60. We know it's a nice way to say thank you for calling in, but we also know that the real reason that you're going to call support is because you love the program. So please do so now. 888 888- 888-345-9499, 888-345-WHYY, or pledge online at WHYY.org. And now back to You Bet Your Garden.
Jenkins Arboretum supports WHYY. Jenkins Arboretum, a 26-acre garden located in Devon, is open to the public at no charge, 365 days a year from 8 a.m. to sunset. Jenkins Arboretum is holding its annual plant sale this weekend, Saturday, April 30th and Sunday, May 1st, sponsored by the American Rhododendron Society. Jenkins is also hosting a Mother's Day Rhododendron and Azalea Flower Show on Mother's Day, May 8th. Details at www.jenkinsarboretum.org.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, can you start composting in the spring? If you can, what can you use instead of shredded fall leaves to get your compost cooking if you didn't save those precious fall leaves? We'll tell you the best replacements for leaves as the dry brown essential component in a compost pile when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, though, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Dana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you.
Well, thank you, Dana. Where are you?
I'm calling from North Philadelphia, so I'm in a very urban area, and I have a vacant lot that the city gave to us, and we've been trying to garden it for maybe the past 5 years.
Really? So you set up garden plots in it?
Yeah, we have a few garden plots, a few planters with flowers, and we had an area for the kids to play as well last year. We took the slides and stuff out, though. Yeah.
Did you have the soil tested before you started planting things?
Oh, no. It's very rough. I mean, we've added compost to the growing areas every year.
I have to chastise you a little bit.
Oh, no.
Urban land is frequently highly contaminated with lead. And especially since you mentioned children, the danger is not so much in eating produce grown in the contaminated soil, but the lead is easily inhalable, and you absorb it through your skin. So, and it's not an expensive test. I'm kind of shocked that nobody asked you to do it before you opened it up. And I realize it's late in the game, but I would urge you to have it tested, because it's, you know, I'm not going to tell you to have all the soil hauled away or anything like that. But
I was going to say, then what if it is high? What would you suggest to do?
Then you would need a physical barrier on top of the soil where the children are playing. Like in this case, this would be a good use for hardwood mulch or chipped bark or wood chips or something like that.
Well, we did have some wood chips in the area where the kids are playing.
And you would need a solid barrier.
Yeah.
Because it's the lead dust that is dangerous, and you would have to warn the gardeners that they cannot work in the soil with bare hands under any circumstances, and unless you're going to remediate the areas, they should probably wear dust masks.
Right.
So I hate to say this, because I know it's not what you're calling about, but this is something that everybody needs to know. You're far from alone. Now, what's the problem you're trying to overcome?
Well, the problem I'm trying to overcome is stray cats pooping everywhere. Yeah, I want to know. I want to try to figure out a way that I can repel them, keep them out. I mean, a fence, it would be too expensive to build a fortress around it. But they're just, you know, every day I go in there and I have to clean up something, and I know I'm missing some of it. I'm worried too about the possibility of it being dangerous for vegetables being grown. You know,
People, and this is very common. 90% of people misunderstand these dangers.
Mm-hmm.
The danger is immediate. It's not being transferred to the vegetables. The danger is, you know, obviously everybody knows that pregnant women shouldn't go near this material.
Right, yeah.
But there is a danger to the children of being in an area where especially urban cats have done their business, and there's a physical danger to people like you if you're not wearing very heavy gloves. mm-hmm. when you touch the material. And again, being careful not to inhale okay. anything. Now, you have a garden in North Philly and it's not fenced and it hasn't been destroyed?
Oh, it has a fence. It has a fence, but they're not cat-proof fences. You know, it's a chain-link fence.
Good, good.
And they, you know, they climb it or they squeeze in between, you know, the place between the gate and the fence. So,
in an urban area like this where there's lots of cats,
right.
I would say you'll have to do a couple of different things. I would get, like, the most inexpensive chicken wire I could and uh-huh. reinforce all the lower areas. And then at the top of the fence you have a very simple baffle of something like chicken wire just coming out a foot laterally.
Uh-huh.
That would prevent them from climbing up. But most of these cats don't want to try to climb up a chain-link fence. They're squeezing through that gate area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless they're scared. I see them climbing over quick if they're in a hurry.
Yeah. Well, a mm-hmm. baffle at the top will keep them out. And you can go to our website. Go to You Bet Your Garden. Click on Garden Answers A to Z. And go to the critter-proof fence. That'll explain the baffle, a loosely supported foot that comes out at the top of a fence like this. I think you can run a line along the ground so they can't crawl under the fence. You can make an interesting patchwork job that will ride along with one or both of the poles so that when the fence is closed, they can't squeeze through. Make sure mm-hmm. that might need to be stronger wire, although if you wrap the chicken wire around a couple of times, it might work. And then I think the baffle at the top will be very helpful. But then, you know, vigilance, you're going to have to watch. They're going to want to get in there. They do not have a lot of loose soil.
Well, yeah, they just love the box we made for them.
Well, exactly, because they don't have a lot of open ground in the city, and their instincts do not allow them to evacuate in anything else. So even though it may sound dumb, if you have a vacant area or a vacant lot right near your garden, to clear up a patch of soil there, and again, if you're not going to get it tested, wear a dust mask, wear gloves, wear mm-hmm. protection, but close off yours.
Mm-hmm.
Give them something else, and maybe they won't have the desire to try to fight their way through your fencing.
Yeah, that's a good idea. There is a lot right next to it where I could probably open up a little area for them.
I think that'll make the task 100 times easier.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
All right. Good luck.
All right.
1-888-346-9499. Aileen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Mike.
It's good to be with you. Where are you, sir?
I am in Wilmington, Delaware.
Very good. And am I close to pronunciating your name correctly?
You pronunciated my name quite correctly, Mike.
Excellent.
Aileen it is.
Excellent. Very good. What can we do for you, sir?
Here is my question for you. My wife and I have 16 windows in our house at which we have flower boxes each year.
16 flower boxes, huh? That must
yes.
be quite the sight.
It is quite the sight. It's a corner property, and it is quite beautiful. Our neighbors look forward to it each year, and we like to think that we kind of liven up the spirit in the neighborhood with the flowers throughout the summer.
And you know why your flowers are more pleasurable to look at than regular landscaped flowers?
No, tell me.
Because yours are more at eye height. Yours are higher up in the ground where
right.
we don't expect to see those bursts of color. And it really fulfills a very positive sense when you see these flowers suspended up in the air, because we kind of expect them on the ground. You are lowering blood pressure in your neighborhood by like an average of 20 points, I have a feeling.
Well, we would like to think that we're making that kind of contribution, Mike. Do we need to change the soil each year based on what we had in the soil the summer before? Or do we need to change the soil at all?
I tend not to. Now, you're growing ornamentals, right? You're growing flowers.
We're growing flowers. We are getting them from the nursery or, you know, one of the home stores and just putting them into the ground, you know, already blooming pretty much, or, you know, getting ready to bloom.
That's fine. I like low-hanging fruit. And you started out with a soil-free mix, a bagged potting soil?
A bagged potting soil is what we've used, yes. That's what we started out with.
And how do you feed the plants?
Well, we feed them by putting in some Miracle-Gro, and we put the Miracle-Gro in the water, and that's basically the only way we feed them.
Then here's what I'd like you to do, because you are contaminating that soil with chemical salts by using that Miracle-Gro.
Okay.
And
what do you suggest?
You're going to get some salt buildup in that soil.
Right.
So what I would suggest is let's look at each flower box as a unit.
Right.
I would like to see you remove maybe one-tenth of the soil from each box.
Right.
Mix up what's left behind.
Right.
And then add some compost.
Compost
instead of more potting soil. It'll give the boxes a little more structure. They won't dry out as quickly, which can be a problem when you only have soil-free mix.
And that's an issue that we have, drying out quickly.
Well, you know, it goes both ways, man. The soil-free mixes drain remarkably well, and more plants are killed by overwatering than underwatering. But, of course, the corollary to that is they do drain very well and they dry out very quickly. So in a dry summer, and I think we're all hoping to get one of those again, you can spend a lot of time watering. So if you take out a little bit of your old potting soil, and you can reuse that in another container somewhere, and mix in 10 to 20 to a maximum of 25% compost, that's all the food your flowers will need for the season. It'll retain moisture better. If you're on a corner property, you probably still have some old fall leaves hidden in corners and stuff like that.
That is correct. That's correct.
Shred those up, and after you install your flowers, put a thin mulch of shredded leaves over top of the soil. That'll gain you an extra half a day to a day between waterings alone.
Just shredded leaves on top of the soil.
Right, just to keep the evaporation levels down.
Of course, yeah, that makes perfect sense, yes.
So, yeah, the basic line is if you have good containers, if you filled them up with the right soil, it's always good to freshen it up a little bit, take out some of the old soil and put in some new potting soil. But
that's
in your
what
case,
I was looking for.
Exactly. Good. In your case, we're going to get you off the Miracle-Gro and do it with compost this year.
Oh, that is great. Great information, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Well, I appreciate you beautifying the neighborhood.
You bet.
All right. You take care, sir.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
You're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY. Good morning, I'm Eugene Saun here, and we are asking for your support for You Bet Your Garden. We know lots and lots of people tune in each and every Saturday morning to listen to Mike McGrath and the useful tips and the interesting learning about gardens and composting and all sorts of other things. And if that's something that you make a point of listening to each Saturday morning, we would love you to make a point of calling in at 888-345-9499 and become a member here at WHYY. You can also pledge online at whyy.org. One of the benefits of pledging online, Joanne Allen, who joins me here, is that you can take a look at all the potential gifts we could send your way for a pledge, one of which is, I think there's a better description and you can understand it better by looking online than I can do justice to it here on the air, is the Kitchen Garden Box. It's Mike McGrath's own design, and it's a way for you can possibly save seeds from your plants for future years, as well as organize things, and it's got recipes and this and that. The full explanation, I think, is online, and they'll do a better job at whyy.org. But it is yours for a pledge of $120. Whatever you can afford, please call and support You Bet Your Garden on WHYY.
You know, Gene, people, I may call you Gene, right?
Because, yeah, sure.
You know, you're my boss, and when we're off the air, I have to call you Mr. Saun. So
that's not true.
Gene, you know that everybody does their part to make sure that public media stays alive in the Delaware Valley. And there are people who are here who are friends of WHYY. We want to thank them for coming by. And we also want to thank the Greater Philly Illini Club. They're folks who went to the University of Illinois and who are proudly wearing their orange and blue and white are the colors for the Illini. We want to thank them for their help.
And so, they're talking trash about Michigan and Indiana at the same time.
And Penn State, don't forget. They like to talk trash over there in that little corner. But we want to get them on the phone, and we want to get them answering your calls at 888-345-9499. Also online at whyy.org. We want them receiving calls from you, because when you call with your pledge, you're helping to keep WHYY on the air, and you're helping with our spring membership campaign. Why? Well, because we have bills to pay, quite frankly. 50% of our operating budget comes directly from you, our listeners. So if you are a You Bet Your Garden fan, if you tune in on Saturday mornings, if you like what Mike McGrath has to offer, then now is the time for you to step up and let us know. Your support is vitally important to keeping public media alive here in the Delaware Valley. So the number again is 888-345-9499, and also online at whyy.org. Mr. Son, yes?
Joanne, one of the things I like about when I listen to Mike McGrath is sometimes the best things I hear are the things that I'm doing wrong that I can fix simply. Not so much that complicated things that I would have to start doing, but at least not harming the trees and shrubs and flowers in my yard. I remember the first time I heard Mike talk about how, well, really, you know, if you're up near your house, you're better off, rather than using bark mulch, just have some shredded leaves. We have these big trees in our yard, and getting rid of the leaves is a hassle anyway. It was such a great tip, easy, and it actually saved me a lot of time, effort, and money. And it's the kind of thing you learn each and every week on You Bet Your Garden. If that sounds like a testimonial that rings a bell in your head in terms of either that tip or another one, something you've picked up and learned from Mike McGrath and You Bet Your Garden, please call in and make a pledge in honor of the program at 888-345-9499. I think I might dub him the King of Compost.
Okay. I now dub thee, Mike McGrath, the King of Compost. If you want to support the King of Compost, give us a call at 888-345-9499. You'll be supporting WHYY at the same time. Go online at whyy.org. We really appreciate all of the support that we get from you. So here again, the number, 888-345-9499. Thank you.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible with support from Seed Savers Exchange, whose 2011 Heirloom Seed Catalog, offering nearly 600 varieties, is now available. Learn more at seedsavers.org.
Supporting WHYY, CAPS. The Council for the Advancement of Public Schools in Bucks and Montgomery Counties reminds listeners that supporting public education does more than help children learn. It helps build their future. Each day, our more than 200 public schools help nurture and cultivate the potential of more than 200,000 students. As a friend of public education, you can learn more about CAPS and the happenings in Bucks and Montgomery County's public schools online at friendsofpubliced.org.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll tell you what you can use instead of shredded fall leaves to get some compost cooking this spring. But you're going to have to wait through a couple more of your fascinating phone calls first at 1-888-346-9499. Lee, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks. I'm calling from Princeton, New Jersey, and have a question about how to place my tomatoes. I have a small yard, and I have raised beds, and I've got lots of vertical gardening going on that prohibit me from rotating my placement of tomatoes every year. They would throw too much shade on the rest of the garden, and I've got to put them in the same place. And I guess I've read about different problems that can come from having tomatoes in the same place year after year. And I was wondering if there's any advice you could give me about how to mitigate the fact that I can't rotate my tomato crops around.
Now, you say you're in Princeton. I know Princeton and Lawrenceville in that area very well. Aren't there a ton of community gardens near you where you could plant your tomatoes with abandon and maybe spread out the stuff in your backyard?
I guess so. None are within walking distance, so the idea of driving to a community garden seems a little
strange to me. It would be if we were talking about string beans or peas or something that when it's coming in needs to be picked every day. But tomatoes, there's a lot of wiggle room. You could you could visit the tomatoes on weekends and holidays, in a custody battle, and they would probably do fine. So I would want to consider that. I would consider, do you have any areas of your house you could install some pretty big planters that would gain you some extra space?
That would be tough, but I mean, I guess that's possible, but there's not, I mean, rotation of tomatoes is that important that I should consider community gardening as an option.
How long have you been growing tomatoes in the same spot?
This will be the fourth year.
And you haven't seen the yellowing or the browning of the lower leaves?
I have.
Oh, okay. Yes, that's going to get worse, unfortunately. That's the sign that you have. In Princeton, I would say it's exclusively verticillium wilt. Now, fusarium wilt is more of a problem in warmer climates. But they both do the same thing. They both simply build up in the soil where tomatoes have been grown year after year. And every year the symptoms get worse until finally this little annoyance of the lower leaves turning yellow turns into plants that die by July or August, and it's heartbreaking. You have two options. The one thing you might want to try this year is see if there's a lot of hip nurseries in your area. See if anybody is selling grafted tomatoes. I've been seeing these spring up all over the place this year. These are tomato varieties that are grafted onto the roots of a different variety, and the root system is probably the most known resistant to these soil-borne wilts. So if you plant them correctly, make sure that graft is never buried, the roots will be the only thing that enters the soil, and that's a disease-resistant tomato. And then tomatoes can be grafted very easily, so there's no limit to the varieties that they could put upon these roots. So you can grow any variety you want, but the rootstock has been engineered to try to help you out in your situation. But I am seeing these at high-quality nurseries all the time, and everybody is asking me about them. Grafted tomatoes are the hot new thing, and this is why they are grafted specifically, for people like you and all of us, 90% of us who don't have the room we would want. Your other option is to really swap out a massive amount of soil in the hole when you plant your tomatoes. Really try to get a lot of the old soil out of there and replace it with a mixture of ProMix, you know, one of the seed starting loose potting soil mixes in compost, say 50-50, and that would protect the roots from most of the disease. They would eventually get into soil that was contaminated, but they would have a good early childhood education. If you don't want to join a community garden, you don't want to grow in containers, you want to stay in your backyard, those are your two big choices, is grafted tomatoes, which I'm led to believe are vastly superior to just regular old disease-resistant varieties, and really excavating some soil and kind of creating a new planting area by default in the same old area. You know, you're keeping the frame, but you're swapping out the pictures.
Well, great. Those are some wonderful options.
Well, we wish you luck. We're all about tomatoes, and we always want to see everyone succeed.
Thank you.
All right. You take care. 1-888-346-9499. Nancy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, Nancy. Where are you?
I'm in northern Wisconsin.
Where the girls are warmer. What can we do for Nancy in the frozen north?
Well, you can settle a problem my husband and I are having.
Oh, you're right.
We've got one issue we disagree on, and it's compost. We have his and hers piles, and I don't touch his, and he doesn't touch mine. Mine is a pile of compost just off the chicken coop in the garden where I put the chicken manure and the bedding and the garden waste and kitchen scraps. and it doesn't get used until it sits for at least a good year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, out behind the big shed is his pile, and what he's got in there is chunkier stuff, sticks and branches and leaves and pine needles and just anything he picks up around the yard. And he doesn't have a pile. He's got it all spread out, and he power tills it into our sandy soil. And it's gotten to be about 6 inches thick, and he wants to plant a garden in there, and I'm scared to do it.
Well,
because
now,
I've read that wood chips and undigested wood will rob plants of nutrients, so I'm scared of it.
Right. And do we have, even though we have his and hers composting systems, do we have a common garden? It might be time for a line of demarcation down the center of the garden here.
Actually, he doesn't get to come in the garden.
Well, of course he gets to come into the garden. He's tilled wood chips into the soil. You know, if you were going to put up an electric fence to keep him out, you're a little late.
No, he has not put any of this in my vegetable garden.
Oh, good,
he wants to make a new garden on this spot where he has been tilling all this junk.
Well, he can.
Okay.
He can, but not in your garden.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Will his plants grow as good as mine?
No. His won't grow at all.
So I should just give him my leftover seeds and let him just discover it for himself?
Oh, I think let him fend with his own resources. Now, let me talk to you about both your composts.
Okay.
Your compost is going to be very strong because of the chicken manure.
Right.
And the only brown you seem to have in yours is in your bedding material, which
right.
is straw?
It's pine shavings.
Pine shavings, okay. Now, your chicken manure is the highest nitrogen
right.
of any barnyard manure. You know it is much too hot to use fresh in any
That's
form.
Right.
Even when your manure is finished cooking, it's still going to be slightly unbalanced. So your compost, your composted chicken manure,
okay.
is going to grow you the world's greatest sweet corn. It's a great lawn fertilizer, probably good for potatoes, lettuces, but it could give you, with fruiting plants, it could give you very large plants that don't have as many fruits as they should because it's so high in nitrogen.
Okay.
And I think the only thing you need to do is mix in a little natural phosphorus and potassium to make sure that you balance it out, to get those natural fruiting and root growing elements in there. Because if it's all nitrogen, it'll grow enormous plants, but it won't do anything for flowering. And after a point, nitrogen will inhibit flowering. So you get the famous 30-foot high tomato plants with three tomatoes on them. But you can correct that with some green sand, some bone meal, a little bit of rock phosphate. And I would urge you going forward to mix some more shredded leaves into your composted chicken manure because you can probably use those trace minerals and all the things that trees pull out of the ground. And you got a lot of trees in Wisconsin.
We do, and I have a lot of leaves. So,
yeah.
So I should mix that in while it's composting or after?
Well, ideally, what I would do is I would shred up a whole bunch of leaves. I would make up a big pile of about 2/3 leaves and 1/3 chicken manure in the bedding and see how that worked out. I wouldn't be putting any garden waste, any more green material in there because you already have one of the world's greatest sources of nitrogen.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
Right. Now, your husband is totally fakakta. He's just playing around with no idea of what's
He's
going
just
on
getting
here.
Getting rid of stuff he doesn't know where to put.
And that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you have brushy material, if you have tree limbs, and if you've got a lot of property, just pile that stuff up in an out-of-the-way place and leave it be. And then move the pile after 2 or 3 years, and you will be amazed. Because I have a pile that's nothing but tree branches and woody trimmings. And every 3 or 4 years, I move it, and I get 3 or 4 wheelbarrowfuls of perfect finished compost. So really, what he should be doing now is making real compost by shredding fall leaves, and that's a great thing to add the kitchen waste and the spent plants from the garden to, and that'll become compost fairly quickly, especially if he shreds it up well and mixes everything together well in the beginning, and it's a big pile, and then just spread that on the surface of the soil rather than till it in, and you won't create any new weed problems. And as you know, your chicken manure doesn't create any weed problems because the manure just burns up any weed seeds the chickens have passed.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, good luck. And as always, when men and women disagree, the smart money goes with the woman, even without hearing the details.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Nancy. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Well, as promised, it's time for a question of the week, the shortened version, because we're in a pledge drive show. Bonnie in Centerville, Delaware, writes, you often mention that one of the secrets to making successful compost is to include sufficient brown material in the mix, specifically shredded fall leaves. But in the fall, I mow all my leaves and use the shredded leaves as mulch from my shrub and flower borders. As a result, I have little left over to use in my compost pile. I'm hoping you have some suggestions for other sources of brown material. Well, of course we do, Bonnie. When this came up while I was writing my now best-selling book of compost, Dr. Frank Gowen, retired head of horticulture at the University of Maryland and a renowned composting expert, explained that you can use anything that was once green but is now brown as the dry brown material in your compost pile. We're talking especially the browned-out tops of the previous year's perennials, hostas, black-eyed Susan, echinacea, ornamental grasses. Once these things are shredded up well, and they can be a bear to shred up, you got to keep at it, they can become a perfect replacement for shredded fall leaves, as can dried up corn stalks, which are also hard to shred up, as can straw, if you make sure you get straw and not hay. You want to make sure that there's no seed heads in that bale. Now, obviously, that's the condensed cream of question of the week. You can read the full detailed version at the Gardens Alive website. Just click the link at our website, YouBetYourGarden.org.
And you're listening to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY. Good morning again. It's Joanne Allen joined by Eugene Son. We're asking you to pledge your support to WHYY and to let us know that this program in particular, You Bet Your Garden with Mike McGrath, is something that you like. And if you like it enough to support WHYY, then the number for you to call is 888-345-9499. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. Gene and I were talking off the air just a few minutes ago about how much we really like this program, mainly because neither one of us knows much about gardening. And it's always an informative program, something I learn something I learn several things every time I tune in to You Bet Your Garden on WHYY. And it's because of the way that Mike is able to explain gardening and growing and all of those things that makes the program so engaging. Otherwise, it would be as dry as toast. It would be dull without Mike McGrath. And so we're asking you to call us and let us know that you like the work that Mike does, and we'll pass that word on to him. You can become a member. You can renew your membership. You can rejoin us. You can give us an extra gift by calling 888-345-9499.
We have just a couple minutes left before we are going to be on to the next program. So this is your time. If you want to make that pledge and have it count towards You Bet Your Garden, let's get going. Pick up that phone. Put down the shovel and pick up the phone. 888-345-9499. That's 888-345-WHYY or pledge online at WHYY.org. It's a windy but sunny Saturday morning, so I know a lot of people are going to be out getting out in their yards doing various things. I know sometime this weekend I'm going to have to get the lawnmower out. Our front yard is starting to look a little bit like a jungle, but I'll do a better job of having learned a couple things on You Bet Your Garden this morning. If that sounds like something you can relate to, that you learned things on listening to You Bet Your Garden, please call and support it. 888-345-9499.
As you know, these are uncertain times with public media, for public media, given some of the debate down in Washington over whether or not all of the funding should be pulled. But, you know, right now, we don't get a lot of funding out of Washington, but what we do get is worth having. Yet at the same time, what's even more worth having is your support, because 50% of our operating budget comes directly from you, our listeners here at WHYY. 888-345-9499. Also pledge online at WHYY.org. We have a goal before the next few minutes. Let's get at least 20 listeners to call in.
And we can get there one call at a time, one pledge at a time, one online pledge at a time. 888-345-9499 or WHYY.org. Wow, we've gotten a flurry of calls in there so far. I think we are at least halfway to that goal of 20. We can still have room for you, still phone lines open. Please call now. It is turning to be a beautiful Saturday morning. In fact, just a little while ago, I saw someone rollerblading by while playing the trumpet. So, and it's, you know, everyone has their own Saturday routine. Apparently, that must be that fellow's routine. We'd like to make pledging to WHYY part of your routine. The number is 888-345-9499, whether you play the trumpet or not.
Or you might be playing a saxophone. Who knows? 888-345-9499, also online at WHYY.org. We have all kinds of gifts that are available to our listeners. And if you are a You Bet Your Garden fan, then you might want to get the You Bet Your Garden flower pot mug. Yes, it looks like a flower pot. It has a handle. It's that it has WHYY on one side in blue, and on the other side it's You Bet Your Garden in green. A $60 pledge, and you can have this mug. Then you can drink all the coffee or soda or whatever it is that you drink from it. But you have to make the phone call. You have to make the pledge at either WHYY.org or 888-345-9499.
And we double-checked there are no holes in the bottom of this mug, so your coffee will not pour out onto your desk and make a mess. We have, at least 15. Their calls are coming in very quickly. We have at least 15 in, but we're still looking to get 20 this break. We would like to pledge online at WHYY.org or call us the old-fashioned way, as Joanne likes to call it, 888-345-9499. Just minutes to go in You Bet Your Garden. If you want to get your pledge and have it count towards the show, call now, please. 888-345-9499. We'd like to thank all our members who are here answering phones, as well as the Greater Philly Alumni Club, alumni from the University of Illinois. We got at least one pledge who said the person said they only called in because the alumni were here. So thank you for that call. Why don't you jump in, whether you're a fan of that university or You Bet Your Garden, 888-345-9499.
And Gene, we have just about a minute to go, but you can continue calling 888-345-9499 or pledge online at WHYY.org. Say yes to Mike McGrath. Say yes to WHYY. Say yes to public media in the Delta.